Some creatures kick in your front door. Others pick the lock, raid the fridge, and somehow convince you to thank them for stopping by. The European blister beetle belongs squarely in that second category. It's a glossy black little ball that orchestrates one of nature's sneakiest cons. But sometimes, working smarter rather than harder can look a lot more like freeloading, like the European blister beetle here in Life, Death, and Taxonomy.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cass for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cass's music, please search Cass Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate, just visit patreon.com/LDTaxonomy or click on donate on our website, LDTaxonomy.com.
And today we're talking about a blistering bug in the blistering heat of summer, but more on that later.
Oh, yes. I am feeling it in North Florida. I don't know if you are in South Florida since you get more of a breeze from the ocean, but...
It's a little breezier. It's a little breezier.
It is swampy. Stagnant air, high humidity, and just unforgiving sun.
Yeah, it's a little swamp. It's definitely you're going outside and you're just breathing that humidity. But it's definitely got a breeze here, which is always good.
A breeze is like a nice little rarity here. It's like, oh, I didn't know they had those. I didn't know that was still playing in theaters.
It's a second run theater for breezes over there.
Yep. Well, I'm also like 45 minutes inland, so any breeze from the ocean is long gone by the time it reaches my house.
You have to have river breezes.
not as prevalent. I have a blister right now from raking. I have delicate hands from not having raked anything in a long time.
Delicate office man hands.
They're so soft. I haven't done...
Our ancestors would be so upset.
They would probably kill me.
No, they would probably be like, what, you're making money and you don't have to leave the house? There's air conditioning? Whoa.
They'd be like, what's money?
That's huge. Yeah. Well, oh, you went way far back. I was thinking of like... like two generations three generations ago.
It's funny how I don't really consider that as ancestors. I consider that's just a couple generations ago. When you say ancestors, I immediately think it has to have at least been a millennia. What are we talking about though? Blisters?
We're talking about the European blister beetle.
Doesn't that sound like a fun guy?
It does sound like a fun guy.
European. Okay, we're off to a good start. Blister. Ooh, not we've
not
tanked.
Good.
And then beetle. That's a step up from blister. So I think
it does. Well, especially at least it alliterates the word blister.
Right.
It's like, oh, all right.
Are European blisters worse than Western Hemisphere blisters? Who knows?
Who knows?
Somebody does. It's also called the black oil beetle, or just the oil beetle. But we're going to call it here the scented stowaway and blister bright side.
Blister bright side. Okay.
That song is an earworm and has been in my head all day since I came up with that. Let's sprinkle a little bit of science in this vat of banter that we've been brewing.
It is in the kingdom you know, love, and are in, the kingdom Animalia. The phylum is Arthropoda. The clade is Pancrustacea.
We were here recently.
We've been here, yeah. You know, I realized we've been in arthropod land
for a while.
For a while. Yeah. We celebrated America 250 with bugs.
It's bug month.
That's what we've been. It's bug month. It's been more than a month.
I mean, we've already done the our eagle, last, right?
Our last non-bug was a rat. And that's about, and then it was a turtle.
Well, I mean, we've done a couple spiders. Those aren't bugs.
Well, they're arthropods.
True. Yeah, this season has
technically an ant is not a bug. If we want to get technical,
we have not done a single mammal. season 43. We're on season 43 of the show. We still have our things numbered by seasons for some reason. Of 10 episodes each. And this one has had 3 spiders and no mammals. And you're a mammal man. This is your fault.
Well, you got to savor them. There's a lot of good spiders.
There are a lot of good spiders. And I guess we're out of mammals. We're done. We've done them all. All the interesting ones are taken.
There's more.
Well, what happens is I find a list of interesting animals in the same genre. It's like, oh, look at all of these like ants that do cool things. And then I'll add them to the list and do the research. And then they'll find their way together into the same, you know, season or whatever.
I mean, technically, if we went forever, if we were able to like put our brains in robots and just keep going forever, we would eventually be doing nothing but bugs.
That's right. We would run out of everything else first, and then we would be left with this bug is slightly different.
It's blue.
than the other 30 species within the same genus. This one just lives on this island instead of living on this island.
Right, exactly. And it's got like it's like antenna is a little longer.
But speaking
of bug, yes, it's a class insecta. And not a spider. It is an insecta. The order is Coleoptera. The suborder is Polyphagia, which it means it eats a lot of things. The infraorder is Cucugiformia.
Isn't that a crazy evil dog?
Cucugiformia. What root language is that? Formia obviously is the same as it always is.
Yeah.
But what is Cucugi?
That's interesting. I did not do the etymology on that.
The family is Meloidae. The genus is Meloe. Meloe, probably. And then the binomial name is Meloe Proscarabasis. Abeus. Proscarabasis.
There is, so to answer your earlier question, there is the Cucugis comes from the Spanish word cocuyo, which is a kind of beetle, and that traces back to a Taino word, which is cucuyo, which is also for beetle. Beetle form of beetle.
Cucugi. Cucujo. I like that. That's a good word for beetle.
Cucugis?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so since we're in the business of naming things, it's time for my favorite part of the show, nitty gritty nomenclature. The part of the show where I ask you a question, and that is, what is the English translation for the binomial nomenclature, which in this case is Meloe Proscarabasis? So yeah, what does that mean? Does that mean A, honey beetle-like thing? B, armored friend? C, black oil shell? Or D, evil desert beetle? Meloe Proscarabasis.
Scarab has to be beetle, right? So the ones that don't have beetle in it. I was hoping Meloe would be oil, because that the genus is all oil beetles. I'm going to go with black oil shell. I'm going to say that scarab does mean beetle, but it probably comes from a root that means shell. And you've gone granular. So I'm going to do the oil one. Final answer. It's either that or the honey one. And it's like a ironic name.
Is there your final answer? Is C?
Final answer, yeah.
That is incorrect. I tried to go as granular as I possibly could, but I could not find anything. I could not break down scarab anymore. It just means beetle.
Okay.
And meloe is honey. In Spanish, honey is miel. So
it's an ironic name.
Not
these are honey beetles.
Well, actually, it's
but the honey is bad for
it's
you.
It's not ironic because, as we will find out later, honey is a big part of this beetle's life.
Ah, so, I see. But not all oil beetles, right? Which is the genus?
Yeah, I don't know, but this beetle's relationship to honeybees is unique.
Maybe enough of them do it that the genus became known for it.
Yes, but maybe.
We'll talk about that later. You want to know what it looks like?
Sure. If you got the time.
I do. This particular one is a shiny black beetle, sometimes with blue or violet metallic sheens. It has a robust, elongated, somewhat cylindrical shape. If you look up the genus on Wikipedia, there's another oil beetle that has a really big, it's mostly abdomen. This one, it's still got a prominent abdomen, but it's like almost ant in its proportions. Head, thorax, abdomen. But it has elytra, which are the hardened forewings. That are very short, and they don't cover the complete abdomen, so it gives it a waistcoat that won't button up, or that it looks like he's wearing his elementary school shell, like he's busted out of it a little bit. And it doesn't have functional hindwings and cannot fly, so this beetle, based on its elytra and its wings, it's like it's given up the flying life a long time ago.
Looks like a big guy who's wearing a vest that's way too small for him. And he's exactly. Managed to button one button.
Right. Exactly. But it is like the quintessential black beetle. Looks crunchy. But how big is it? Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listeners part of the show, the part of the show when we present the animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. It's also part of the show that's introduced by you when you send in audio of yourself saying, singing, or chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com. We do have a new measure up intro this week.
Nice. No more Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Scott T says, my 8-year-old son chittering. Without further ado, the listener's part of the show.
Measure up. Oh yeah, jazz hands.
Nice chitter.
There was flair in there. That's a good chitter. You know what I've noticed? Thank you, Scott T, and 8-year-old jazz hands enthusiast. A lot of people that send in measure ups will send in two takes. We've never instructed that. It's just nice if everyone wants to be like extra helpful and like, here's two different ones. Just mix and match.
Well, once if you're doing it already, you might as well give us a couple with some different angles.
Yeah, we'll have another one next week.
We'll even give you your motivation. You are chittery.
Yeah, you're chittery. You're feeling
chitterbug.
Chittery. You got the chitterbugs. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, young chitterer.
Thank you, Scottson. Scottson.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Scottson. Scottson tea. It's like Booker T. Washington. He's inventing peanuts as we speak.
As we speak. He's inventing peanuts. Booker T. Washington. Famous for the invention of the peanut.
I think he invented peanut butter, which is huge.
Yeah. But not peanuts. Like,
he merely discovered their true potential.
Franklin inventing electricity.
Right. Let's talk about the size of the beetle, the adult beetle, 10 to 35 millimeters, or roughly 0.4 to 1.4 inches. A family-owned grocery store in Prescott, Wisconsin, called Potacek IGA. I know that that's a Czech word. I know there's probably a Czech community in this in Prescott, Wisconsin. But man, is that ever the worst name for like branding purposes I've ever heard? Potacek IGA.
Is it worse?
Potacek is a really hard to
is
say.
Is it worse than X?
It's P-T-A-C-E-K. No, it's not worse than X. It's better than X. at least that's unique. If somebody knows the way to how to spell your name, they're gonna find it.
True. Yeah.
But if you but X is everything and nothing.
But also if you told someone to go to Potacek, they'd be like, "Excuse, what did you call me?"
I wonder if it's is Wisconsinites, is this a regional like famous family-owned grocery store? Is it blasphemy to besmirch the name Potacek?
Is it the Piggly Wiggly of Wisconsin?
What's the IGA stand for?
I don't know.
Does G stand for grocery?
There's a Rose IGA here in Jacksonville. It's also like a small grocery store.
Is it something grocery association?
That's possible.
Is it like a co-op?
I never thought about it, but we used to go to Rose IGA. It's just really expensive. It's more expensive than Publix, so it was just convenient.
International Grocery Association.
That makes sense.
It does make sense if it's also in the Czech Republic or in Europe, then it's international. They set a new world record over Labor Day weekend in 2013 by grilling the world's largest bratwurst. They produced a massive Budweiser beer bratwurst weighing 80 pounds. True or false? 1,309 beetles go into the length of this Labor Day feast. And to put it another way, if you wanted to eat the same length of beetles as this bratwurst, you'd have to eat 1,309 beetles.
That can't be right. I think the answer is false. It's 80 pounds, but that would put it at 152 feet.
Final answer?
Yeah. Final answer is false.
The correct answer is true. It was 152 feet and 9 inches, or over 46 meters.
Holy moly.
The poundage you'd think would be larger, but it was a typical sausage width, but it was just incredibly long.
How did they grill it? How do you grill
on a? There's video of it. You can watch it. It's on 60 like a long
grills, road. Like laid end to end.
Yeah, I think it is. I didn't think about that. I was thinking more of like, what's the casing made of? Because if it's natural casing, like intestine, then you're limited by the length of the intestine. But they use collagen. Ground up like hoof and, you know, other animal byproducts to make
the casing,
just a synthetic casing. Synthetic in that it is, you know, made from the animal, but made by people. Not that it's made of plastic. There are plastic casings for sausages, but you have to eat them. Yeah, you have to. You don't have to eat them.
You have to eat the case.
Remove them and eat the skinless sausage on the inside.
You can eat your bratwurst, but you got to finish your plastic first. Well, I don't want to.
But also, like, if you make bratwurst, you know how, like, you see those links, like sausage links?
Yeah.
That is all one casing that they twisted to make, like, separate.
Individual ones, yeah.
Individual ones. So if you just don't twist it, you have a really long sausage.
Huh. Right. The things that dogs always have in their mouths in the cartoons. A dog's favorite food in the universe, basically.
Right.
Wow.
Let's talk about triangulan size.
Let's do.
Triangulan is the name of their first instar. It's a little larva. The triangulan phase of this bug's life. And it's about 1.5 millimeters or 0.06 inches. Brandenburg Gate. Have you been to Brandenburg Gate?
Where is it?
Have you been to Germany?
I have been to Germany.
In Berlin?
I've not been to Berlin, no.
It's Berlin's most iconic landmark and one of Germany's most significant historical monuments. It is a neoclassical design modeled after the Propylaea on the Acropolis in Athens. If you're going to do something that you want to stand the test of time in the West, neoclassical is the way. Neoclassical is the way.
Is that the same like style as like all of the like
the White
Victory
House.
Arches and the Arch of Triumph in Paris?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Just these big white columns with all these like facades, reliefs on them.
Yeah, Washington is all neoclassical. Yeah.
Yep, that is the way to go.
The Seattle Needle, the Space Needle, is not.
I was going to say, I was like, if that is neoclassical, then there is no such thing as neoclassical.
I'm a sucker for Art Deco as well. On buildings and stuff, like I wouldn't want it in my house. But like when you go to Rockefeller Plaza in New York, that's all Art Deco stuff.
Yeah. I like me a good Gothic cathedral. I like a good flying buttress.
True.
Or two.
Yeah. It's hard not to like a flying buttress. But true or false, 12,000 larvae go into the height of the Brandenburg Gate.
60 feet is what I got. That sounds pretty reasonable. I think I'm going to go true. 60 feet sounds like a perfect size for a neoclassical gate. I don't really know what it looks like, but I am anticipating like the Arch de Triomphe in Paris. So
Yeah, it's not like a garden gate, like a little metal fence. It's a big arch thing.
Yeah. So 60 feet sounds about right. So I'm going to say true.
Final answer?
Oui, monsieur.
Correct answer is false. Brandenburg Gate is 26 meters or approximately 85 feet.
Oh, slightly bigger.
It's big. It's big. 25 feet bigger.
Berlin is one of those places I didn't really have that much of an interest in going to because I wanted to see old stuff, and Berlin was almost completely razed and rebuilt. So sure. I was like, oh,
but I'm sure there's lots of historical stuff there.
There's lots of like Cold War stuff.
Recent
there.
History yeah. stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I went to Bavaria instead.
That's probably worth it.
But I'd love to go back.
If you have to choose.
Yeah, but if you go to like Munich or Cologne, there's all these like really old cathedrals and monasteries and abbeys and stuff. It was really cool, the castles. And I'm a sucker for a castle.
Yeah, it is nice. It's nice even like when you go to a the Castilla de San Marcos. Is that what it is called?
The one in St. Augustine? Yeah.
Yeah. And then you see the graffiti on the walls, and it's just like, wow. A couple hundred years ago, there was just a little Dickens here graffitiing the wall.
And time has not taken that away from us.
Yeah. Well, apparently it was because like they the particular stuff that they used as like kind of like stucco, where it's just, you know, you people love to carve into it. So it's not just like, you know, a modern day like paint or whatever graffiti would be. It's like they carved into the walls.
I have not been inside that fortress since I was a little kid, but I've been outside of it many times because it's free to go walk around outside.
Yeah, we usually we've been in a couple times. You get to go on top of the wall. You get to see somebody shoot the cannon.
You can see that from in the moat.
That's true. You could see it outside too.
In fact, we did.
But you are from the perspective of an invader. Don't you want to see it from the defense position?
The perspective of someone who is drowning in the moat.
Yeah.
And they're shooting cannons that they can't possibly aim at me. I'm safe from the cannons, actually. I'm as safe as I could possibly be. I'm in the
moat. I realize a moat, and when you walk around that particular castle or that fort, a moat even with no water is strategically good because it's hard to get like siege engines in a good position. You have to like build over it or build some sort of platform at the bottom of it because it's like a trough. There's no like flat ground.
Just taller ladders is all you need.
Yeah, well, yeah. True. But ladders, you're climbing a ladder and people are trying to kill you with projectiles.
Well, that fort makes for one of three strategic Spanish forts in the area. I've been to two of them. The other one is in San Juan, and then the last one is in the Dry Tortugas, south of Key West. Yeah.
I love a dry tortuga, also known as a tortoise.
Dry tortoise, yeah.
A wet tortuga is just a regular turtle.
A wet lives in the water. Tortuga is a happy tortuga because he's drinking water. You got huge tortoises over at Jacksonville Zoo. Anyway, we are.
So there's a couple things you could do if you're in the northern part of Florida,
or Germany.
Germany, yeah. Are you ready here to hear some fast facts about the European blister beetle?
Yeah.
It's native to Europe.
I knew it.
Isn't that crazy? It's found in meadows, field margins, warm open sites, heathlands.
What?
Doesn't a heathland sound European stuff? It's just European.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
But doesn't a heathland sound just cozy? I would love a cottage on the heathlands.
A hearthland. I would rather have a hearthland.
Oh, a hearthland would be great. What's a heathland?
A hearthland sounds cozy. A heathland could also be like a no man's land.
It is. Well, it's open shrubs, shrub land.
It's like, oh, you know.
Actually, you probably wouldn't want to live there. You would want to live there now if you like worked remotely and you just worked in an office. But back then, it was like poor soil.
So poor William got lost over in the Heathlands. Mm-hmm. We never saw him again.
Don't go onto the moors. Dry grasslands they like, and then orchards, of course. Everyone likes an orchard. It occurs across most of the continent except the far north. Obviously, it's too cold there for most bugs. In the UK, it is more common on the south and west, southwest England and South Wales. Blister beetles are approximately are a group of approximately 2,500 species that Meloiae genus. There's 2,500 species in the world. And they're known for fun secretions. These little squirts shoot out cantharidin. Cantharidin. Which is a potent blistering agent used to uses chemical defense. And many species are aposematic. Not this one, but many are. Do you remember what that means?
Oh, you put me on the spot. Thanks.
Aposematic.
I don't remember what aposematic means.
It's a quiz question. It's one of our vocab words.
From like 3 years ago.
We often talk about aposematism. It's when, I'll give you a hint, poison dart frogs are aposematic.
Oh, where they are colored in a way to indicate mm-hmm. danger.
Correct. Brightly colored and conspicuous looking to warn presidents, predators, and presidents about their toxicity.
That I wish that word had any indication of color or shading, but aposematic yeah. does not sound like that. It sounds like going against your body, like aposematic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like it should be like quita colored. I don't know. Like caution colored or something.
They undergo something called hypermetamorphosis, which means they go through several distinct larval stages before reaching adulthood. And we learned about their first instar, which is the triangulin phase, when they're a little larva that could. Adults are active in spring and feed on plants, leaves, and flowers. Larvae are primarily insectivorous, but they can be a little bit kleptoparasitic. We'll talk about that later, right? I assume.
Yes.
But they're also, are you going to talk about the fact that they are facultative parasitoids?
Hmm. It depends on what that means.
It means they're parasites, but they don't even have to be parasites.
Well,
they can survive on their own. They can go through their entire life cycle without being parasites, but they can also choose to be parasites.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to talk about that parasitism. So,
they were named Insect of the Year in 2020. In Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. So what a great and recent boon for
what
them.
What is the criteria for that?
Just being cool. Just being chill.
Do they just go through all of them eventually and just say, well, this one hasn't earned Insect of the Year?
I wonder if it's voted on. Somebody said, this thing gives me little blisters.
Does everyone like it?
That's cool.
And a bunch of blistered hands were raised in the air, and then they're like, the eyes have it. European blister beetle.
But don't touch your eyes.
The eyes have it, but don't touch them.
One thing I was interested in, but I didn't find an answer to quickly, is the chemical toxicity to humans of their blistering oils. Don't eat it. I definitely don't eat it.
Yeah, well, just don't eat bugs you're not aware of.
Well, even if you're aware of it.
Apparently it has been used to create aphrodisiacs.
Oh, of course.
But it can be, it's obviously toxic. It can be toxic to horses. It's not great. I'm not sure how you would use it as an
aphrodisiac. If it's toxic to horses, you could probably assume it could be dangerous to people.
Well, they eat alfalfa, and so they're a part of like the staple feed of like cows and horses. So.
I'm seeing that wiping the chemical on the skin can cause blistering and painful swelling.
I guess it depends on how, what gets your gears going, but I guess that can be an aphrodisiac. If you like pain. I guess so.
But that's all I got. Do you have any big facts?
I do. This one's called Smells Like Team Spirit. So you've mentioned the triungulins, which is the first larval stage for this blister beetle. They are very small, and they don't immediately hunt for food when they hatch. They can engage in this parasitism that you referenced earlier. And rather than having to go find food themselves, they can catch an unlikely ride and be some little insect hitchhikers. So what they want to do, their goal is to catch a ride on a honeybee. And there's a couple ways you can do this. One is to look like a flower. The other is to smell like something that the bee wants to go hang out with, which in many cases is a flower. But in this case, is a female bee. So there is a chemical that the larva release that mimics the scent of lone female
lady speed stick
bees. Yeah. It mimics the scent with lady speed stick. I don't know anything better than that. If it was the opposite, it'd be Axe body spray, but I don't know what the
what's the lady version of that?
I don't know what the equivalent is. But yeah. So male bees will be flying around. They'll be like, "Ooh, that smells like a dame over there." And they'll go flying over to the flower, assuming, like, anticipating that they're going to find a female bee, a potential mate. And then instead of finding romance, that unlucky bee gets covered in dozens of very, very, very small stowaways clinging to its body. And of course, this is what bees do best. They land places, they pick up stuff they didn't mean to, and they take that to other places. That's their whole role in the animal kingdom, that and to make honey. So these little larvae will cling on to the bee just like pollen clings to the bee. Then the bee will fly away, obviously devastated at the hijinks, at the ruse. But then the male will eventually find an actual female and perform the reproductive act. And the larva will transfer over to her, which is, that's an odd rideshare program. I'll say that. So then now they're on the female bee, and who also doesn't know that there are a bunch of larvae, like a European blister beetle larvae on her. And then she'll take those back to the hive while she's collecting pollen and nectar. And once she's inside the nest, or when the larva will leave the bee and just live there, and they'll eat pollen and nectar, and they'll eat the bee's eggs or even developing larvae. So they'll start to parasitize the inside of a beehive. So this allows the blister beetle to bypass the difficult task of finding the bee's nests on their own. And instead, it's just taken straight there. I'm trying to think of a movie where the good guy accidentally brings the bad guy straight to where they want to go. I guess any, like,
Drake's Uncharted.
Yeah, any, like, Indiana Jones style thing where the good guy does all the work and the bad guy just, you know, sets off some dynamite and makes it to the, you know, the ancient chamber of the sun with his goons. But yeah, this is an example of chemical mimicry, which is not that common in the animal kingdom. But it's interesting that they don't mimic the scent of a flower, or they don't just hang out on a flower and wait for a bee to come around, because who knows if the bee is going to visit your flower. But if you mimic the scent of a female bee, then a male bee is going to visit your flower. And that's not a euphemism.
I guess I thought that's not happening out in the wild. I thought it was just the queen.
What? That there are female bees out there?
No, that there's male and female bees just enjoying each other's company in the wilds. I thought the queen gets all the males.
That does not seem to be the case for the European honeybee.
I guess it could change from bee to bee.
Or from A to B.
Ah.
B to Z. But yeah, this is Chemical Disguise. Master of Disguise. A movie I've not seen in a long time.
And since they're just, you know, I could do this, I don't have to do this. I guess if there's no bees around, then you can't do it.
But
and then you are a facultative parasitoid.
And yeah, you go do something else with your life.
Right.
But if you can go be born with a silver spoon in your mouth, then just have that, ride that honeybee to the moon. 10x your growth. But yeah, that
10x your growth.
I insert generic investing bro term here. But yeah, that's what I got. It's the European blister beetle. It was either going to be that or the fact that they squirt out blistering juice. They're all about juice. Some of it blisters things, and some of it makes male honeybees go crazy.
Maybe later we'll do the violet oil beetle or something and talk about that.
Yeah, this one's the
hyper metamorphosis. This was a creature of keywords. Metamorphosis, aposematic. You got facultative parasitoidism.
Yeah, goodness.
Triangulum.
We didn't get
neoclassical design.
Ovoviviparianism or whatever.
Yeah, no. That'd be crazy for a bug.
Maybe there is one.
Budweiser bratwurst.
That, yeah, especially if you make that all one word, like the Germans would. All right, yeah. You got anything else?
That's all I got.
All right, that was the European blister beetle for you out there in Podcastia. Find a flower you like. Make your best smells. And bum a ride off a frenemy like the European blister beetle here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Hey, Taxonomy Titans. I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
Life, Death, and Taxonomy is my favorite in the world podcast.
I was trying to think of for other like the lady speed sticks or whatever? Or is it sprays? Is it sprays? Lotions and potions.